Good morning. We are here at Kilachi Feis on Ranana and Zoom studying Amud Yomi Masechet Shabbat. Today's Amud is Samuch Aleph Amud Bet, 61b. 61b, Samuch Aleph Amud Bet. We're going to start though on Samuch Aleph Amud Aleph in the front here with the Tanu Rabbanan. Ezehu Kamea Mumcha. Ezehu Kamea Mumcha. Now, what are we discussing? What is our topic of discussion? We're discussing certain things that you are not or are allowed to wear into a public thoroughfare on Shabbat. And the question is, are we concerned that you might take it off? Are we concerned that it might look like you're carrying? Again, this whole parak is about rabbinic prohibition. If something is attached to you, it's essentially considered clothing. But there might be a concern that you want to show it to somebody else, right? We have jewelry that women might want to show to other people. Now this Mishnah is actually about men in particular, although what we're going to talk about now could apply to men or to women. So now we're talking about the concept of a kamea. Kamea is an amulet. An amulet in halacha is something that people would use for healing. It sounds a bit superstitious to us. I don't know of anybody who wears amulets today. But back in the day, this was a form of rishua that people would use. And the Mishnah told us, this is already earlier, that a kamea, okay, an amulet that comes from, want to get the words in the Mishnah. The lobe kamea, you may not wear a kamea, is man she'eino min ha-mumcha, when it's not from a mumcha. A mumcha is someone, an expert. You may only wear a kamea on Shabbat when it's from an expert. Okay, that's the distinction that we make. If it's from an expert, you could wear it. If it's not from an expert, you may not wear it. Okay, what's the reason? Rashi tells us, this is on Samach Amud Aleph. Aval b'kamea mumcha shari, d'tachshitu d'cholek ke'achad mi'malbusha. For a person who's sick, okay, and they're wearing a kamea, it's like clothing for them. They're holding, they're keeping it on them. They're not taking it off because they believe, okay, that this is saving their life. Okay, and that it plays an important role in maintaining their health. So, how do we define a kamea mumche? How do you define an expert? I think talisman is probably the right word. Amulet, talisman. How do you define what a kamea mumche is? So, let's look at the Gemara, and we're going to see that there are two different notions of expertise. There's a kamea, an actual amulet that its value has been proven because it's healed a certain amount of people, and that's a expertise that's found. The kamea itself has proven itself. And then you could also have a kamea maker, a person who makes kameot. And at a certain point, someone's really an expert. We assume that everything that comes from his shop, everything that he writes is considered to be a kamea mumcha. And therefore, even if we have to figure out how do you prove that he is an expert as a gavra, as a person. Okay, so that's what the Gemara is going to discuss now. Tan Rabbanan. Ezehu kamea mumche. What is a kamea mumche? Kol sheripei vishana vishilesh. Anything that heals once, twice, and a third time. Okay? So if you have a kamea that heals, three different people who have corona, or it heals three different people who have bronchitis, okay, then it's a kamea mumcha, and you're allowed to wear it on Shabbat. Echad kamea shoktav. This is true of a kamea that's written. Sometimes they would have words or tefillot or psukim in it. The echad kamea shel ikaran, or a kamea shel ikaran, which could be made out of some materials, spices, whatever it is, whatever medicinal elements you want to put into it. Okay. This could be true if it healed someone, a cholesh that has sakana, who is fatally in a dangerous situation. Or someone who doesn't have sakana. It's not even a situation where it healed someone, but where it, let's say you have a family that has, they have a heart condition. So if it so far has prevented three people from getting the heart condition, and that's also a kamea that's considered valuable. That's mumcha, and you're allowed to wear it on Shabbat. Now, we go on. The kosher umatir. This is an interesting line. You wouldn't expect this. The kosher umatir afilu birshut harabim. You're allowed to tie and untie this kamea, even in the Rishut Arabim, even in the public thoroughfare. Okay? Uvilvad shelo yikshirena b'shir uvitabat v'yatzabo b'Rishut Arabim mishum ma'arit ha'ayin. Okay, so what we're saying here is that you're actually allowed to tie and untie this kamea in Rishut Arabim. So let's say I take my kamea and I go stand in the middle of I don't know, Times Square. Okay, we could all agree it's the center of Paris. These are areas that are definitely Rishut Arabim, Min HaTorah. I'm allowed to, there are two different potential issues with tying something. One is that there's certain knots that you're not allowed to tie and untie on Shabbat. Okay, a Ma'asei Uman, for example, and a Ma'asei, a Kesher Shel Kayama and Kesher Shel Uman. Generally, the two issues that we talk about when it comes to knots on Shabbat is that you're not allowed to tie an expert knot, and you're not allowed to tie something that's long-lasting. Okay, how those two things are defined, later on in Masechet Shabbat. That's a tying issue. But what about taking something on and off in Rishut Arabim? So in theory, if I stand in one place and I don't move in Rishut Arabim, and I take something off and I just untie it, hold it in my hands, and then I put it back, I haven't carried something, you know, for Amot in Rishut Arabim. I also have not carried from one Rishut, from one domain to another domain, as we spoke about the first 10 blood of Masechet Shabbat. So I haven't violated anything. So why is this permitted? So there's an interesting piece here, just because the point is that it's Mibnei Shel, you know, I'm just reading here from a footnote. Aren't we concerned you might take it off and then carry it for Amot the Rishut Arabim? They should lo yarvichu klum bigzerazu. There's almost a reductionist reason here. It's basically saying, if you remember that at Shabbat, you're not going to carry anyway. And if you don't remember that at Shabbat, so you're not going to remember when you take it off. Like very bizarre thinking. You might, there could be a situation where you take it off and you remember that at Shabbat, but we still do things even when we're aware of things. We very often do things at subconscious levels, or even when we're aware, or we're not so aware, and we forget. Okay, so this is the Gemara's logic. And Tosfot raises, it actually comes from the Tosfot of Mizayin Amud Aleph. The Tosfot there is the one who actually quotes this idea. There's a Tosfot on Mizayin Amud Aleph, Divrei HaMatchil Bima. As long as Tosfot says it's something that you don't normally tie and untie to show people, so if you take it off once, it's not a big deal. We don't make a big deal about it. Okay, so this is now we continue. There's a second piece here that you're not allowed to. Let's say you're allowed to wear this kamea, okay, and you're allowed to even untie it and tie it in the Rishut Arabim. But what are you not allowed to do? Uvilvad shelo yikshirenu b'shir uvitabat. But you're not allowed to put it around a bracelet, or a shir is like a necklace. V'yatzabo b'Rishut Arabim, and go out b'Rishut Arabim in that way. Why not? Mishum ma'arit ha'ayin. Because it's ma'arit ha'ayin. Why? Because this is not normally how people go out with kameot. Look at Rashi. If you go out with your kamea on a very nice gold jewelry, you know, necklace or bracelet, it's going to look like, come on, this person's not serious. This is not for health reasons. This is for beauty reasons. So what do we do? You have to wear it in a way that looks like you're trying to heal, okay? And that doesn't mean you don't put it on with jewelry. Okay. So now we're going to have a question, because what we said basically is, how do you define a kamea mumka that it heals three times? Okay. Shana, okay. Sheripe, shana, vishilesh. The hatanya, but we learn another brighta. Ezu kamea mumka, kol sheripe, gimu bnei adam kechat. But now we're seeing a different explanation. We're saying, what is a kamea mumka? It's a kamea that heals three different people three times. Okay. Three times. So this is different than our first definition. The first definition said something has to heal three times. Now we're talking about, it sounds like, you know, nine times. Okay, take three, you know, you have to have three kameot healing three different people. So what are we talking about here? The answer is lokasha. Halemachui gavra, halemachui kamea. There's a difference between How do you give, making the person, the amulet maker into a mumche versus making the amulet itself into a mumche amulet. So if an amulet works three times and heals three different people, then the amulet becomes an amulet mumche. Okay, and the whole point is that, let's say in that amulet, there was written the numbers 1 through 71. I'm just raising a, okay. And if that amulet is now proven to help three people, anybody can mass produce that amulet, and that would be considered an amulet mumche. Okay. Now, what about when it comes to the person? The person himself, he's got to create three different amulets, okay, that heal three different people, okay, that each work three times, okay? So he's got to have, if you will, nine success stories, okay? That's in order to become an expert amulet maker, and then anything that this amulet produces, this guy produces, is covered. You're allowed to wear it on Shabbat, okay? Now, I was just thinking, Pinchas, maybe you could lend some insight here. The word hitmachut in Hebrew, hitmachut, right, is to qualify, right, with certification or a degree, right? That's probably from the same word, lehitmachut.
It's specialization.
Say again,
it's specialization.
Specialization. Yeah, like, but for mumcha, lehitmachut, meaning you certify, you receive a degree in a specialized area. Okay, yeah, fair. So good. So this is how we distinguish between these things. Look at Rashi. Hal amchuye gavra v'cholei. Had katani gimel bnei adam mishum destam gimel bnei adam shloshami ne cholaim. Why do we say three people? Because three people generally have three different diseases or illnesses. Okay, you have bronchitis, and you have emphysema, and you have some gastrointestinal thing, whatever it is. Va'ayri begimel minei kmein. She'enan domin zeh lazeh. Amchuye gavra she'naseh mumche b'chol kmeim she'aseh le'olam. Okay, how do you prove that a person becomes an expert? He's got to have three different kameot, and each of these three kameot need to help three different people. Okay, and then this guy's an expert. And it's similar, Rashi says, to this notion of muad. Agach shor v'chamor v'gamal na'aseh muad lako. Let's say an animal, there's this notion of a shur nogeach, a shur that gores. Okay, this actually comes up in Masechet, Parashat Mishpatim, in two parashiyot from now. And when an animal does this three times, it's considered a gorer, okay, G-O-R-E-R, and it's called mu'ad in Gemara language. And you actually have to pay nezek shalem, you have to pay more money if your animal gores. If it's an animal that you didn't expect to gore, you only pay chatzin, then you only pay half of the payment. So too, Rashi suggests here, he speaks about Gemara Masechet Bava Kama, if an animal is nagach shor v'chamor v'gamal, again, it's goring three different types of animals, then it's going to become muad for all animals, okay? So too here, aval kamea enu mumcha em yichtov rofe echad acher echad mehem. Okay, but b'seder. So let's go on now. So Amar Rav Papa. Rav Papa now is going to try to make sense of this. Okay, he's going to ask a few sort of specific questions to try to make sense of the parameters of this specialization of this mumcha. So Amar Rav Papa Pshita li, he says it's obvious to me. Tlat kamei letlat gavre tlata tlata zimni. Itmache gavra, v'itmecha kamea. So he says, it's obvious to me the following case, where you have three different kameot, okay, that are given to three different people, okay, and three times that they heal, okay. So basically, you have an expert maker who makes three kameot. We'll call them kameot 1, 2, 3, and he gives them to three people, A, B, and C, okay, to three people, and these kameot work three different times, that's a total of nine, okay? Then itmachei kamea, the kameot themselves are considered expert kameot, and the itmacha gavra, the itmacha kamea. Okay, that's an obvious case. Now, and that's the most extreme case, where we agree that there is expertise on both the kamea and the kameot and the person. However, talata kamea litalati gavra. Let's say you have three kameot, okay, for three different people. Chad chad. Okay, so you have three kameot given to three different people, and they each work once. Okay, they heal one illness. So what do you have here? Okay, chad chad zimna gavra itmache. The gavra, the person is itmache because he's created three kameot that have all healed. Kamea lo itmache, but the kameot themselves have not become expert kameot because they need to each heal three times. In order to, this notion of a chazaka, by the way, okay, three, a chazaka, comes from Bava Batra. We've seen Bava Kama by Sharmua, that when you do something three times, it creates a chazaka. Okay, now, so in order for something to become, now we're getting more clear categories and definitions here. In order for a kamea to be considered an expert amulet,
excuse me, Rabbi?
And to be an expert amulet maker, he needs to create three kamea that heal, you know, three different people. Yes, Raj.
Regarding this, the chazaka idea. I mean, it kind of like veers away from what the definition of this amulet is. The definition of an amulet is what you said before: three times for three different people. That means it's got to work at least nine times. Now, with this one, it seems like some sort of crazy little loophole. Where it's going to be like, you know, lessened. And it doesn't necessarily qualify this thing to be an amulet just because it's divided a certain way. It doesn't seem like it works.
No, but the point is that there are two different criteria that we're trying to define here. How do you define an amulet itself that's an expert amulet? And how do you define an amulet maker that's considered an expert? So that any other amulet produced by this amulet maker has a hechsher on it. It's like top.
I see what you mean. Okay.
So it's two different criteria, and that's what we're trying to sort of, you know, distill here. Okay. Now the next case is chad kamea litlata gavre. Let's say you wrote one kamea. Okay. Let's say Rashi is a kamea maker. Rashi, the amulet writer, and he makes one kamea, and it works for three different people. Litlata gavre. Okay. And it works for three different people. So then kamea itmachi. The kamea itself is definitely a good kamea, and that kamea can be trademarked and used throughout the world and worn on Shabbat. Whereas Gavri, lo, it's machi. But the Gavra is not, because you've only written one kamea. Maybe it was luck. Maybe you just happened to have gotten your right hand. Okay, but you have to win. You know, you have to be able to do this three times in a row in order to, you know, write three amulets to be a mumch. Now, by Rav Papa. Now, Rav Papa says, but now we're zeroing in on the question. By Rav Papa, tlata kamei lechad Gavra, mai. So he says, let's say you wrote three different kameot, but they only helped one person, okay? Three different kameot that helped one person heal from three different illnesses, okay? So, please God, what I'm saying now shouldn't actually be relevant, but let's say one person gets the, I don't know, we'll call it the Israeli version of coronavirus, and Rashi writes a kamea and it heals him. And then he gets the British version of the coronavirus, and Rashi writes a kamea and it works for him. Then he gets the South African version of the coronavirus, and it heals him. Please God, you shouldn't need to write three kameot. Then it's one kamea is going to be sufficient, one vaccine is going to be sufficient. But let's say there was such a situation. Is this person now considered a mumcha? Okay, so Rabbi, let the kamea lechad gavra mai. So we say, on the one hand, kamea vadai lo itmache. Okay. So the kamea definitely is not considered an expert kamea. Why not? Because it's only healed, it's only healed one person. Okay, where it needs to heal three people. Excuse me. Whereas gavra, I just want to see this case 1 second. Is this a case? One second. Echad kamea. Sorry, he wrote. This is our case. 1 second. Chad kamei, let's let the gavra kamei. Okay, by Rav Papa, let the kamei wrote three kamei out the chad gavra. So my, the kamei vadalo etmachi. You know what? Maybe it's not three different illnesses here. Well, let me just see which Rashi this is. All the Rashi's have the same divrei hamatchil. 1 second. Yeah, it is. It is, as I said, three different sicknesses for one person. So you're writing three kameot for one person who has three different illnesses: South African, Israeli, and British versions of coronavirus, or some would say the Wuhan version of the coronavirus, whatever you want to go with, okay? So there are three types. So now, so Rabbah wants to know, so we say kamea, so my kamea vadai lo itmachi, the kamea definitely isn't itmachi because each kamea is only healing one person. It's not healing three times. Gavra itmachi or lo itmachi, is the person considered an expert? On the one hand, mi'amrinan ha asile. Okay, on the one hand, you could say, listen, he healed three different illnesses. True, it was in one person, but he healed three illnesses. Guy who had three different versions of coronavirus. Odilma mazla dahai gavrahava dekamakamel ktava. Now, maybe this one person who had three different illnesses just has good mazel. He's got good mazel. And because he's got good mazel, the constellations, if you will, aligned, most literally, according to that's what mazel is. Mazel, by the way, when we say mazel tov, you should have the stars show the line for you, okay? Right at the end of Masechet Shabbat, we'll have a discussion about mazal. Ein mazal Yisrael, yesh mazal Yisrael. I think it's on daf kuf nun vav, kuf nun zayin, if I'm not mistaken. And the question is, so maybe this one person, you know, he got lucky. This guy just has good mazal. So even though he has three different illnesses, and he wrote three different kamea for him, it's a function of who he is and not a function of the expertise of the writer or of the amulet itself. Okay, so that's this discussion. And it is interesting, the parallels. Please God, our vaccines will be considered expert vaccines, will be sufficient vaccines for whatever mutation, you know, comes along. Okay, so we have to daven for this. Now, next piece here. Ibayilahu, they asked of them. Now we're going to talk about kameot in general and their status in halacha. Ibayilahu, kamein, yeish ben mishum kedusha, udilma ein behem mishum kedusha. Does a kamea have kedusha or not? You can imagine there are a different number of different nafkaminot. If it, you know, let's say you're done with it, you put it in the geniza. Are you allowed to walk with it into the bathroom? Okay, these are going to be some of the issues that come up, but whether a kamea has kedusha or not. L'may hilchata, the Gemara says, L'may hilchata, what's the practical ramification of this question? Ilema la'atsulindhu mipnei hadleka. One second, I just want to check. Okay, good. L'may hilchata, ilema la'atsulindhu mipnei hadleka. Now, there is a perek in Masechet Shabbat, which we're going to get to, please God, in another, few weeks, months, which has to do with what things are you allowed to save from a house that's burning on Shabbat. Okay. Now, what's the problem with saving things from a house that's burning on Shabbat? The problem is that you're going to take something out of the house into a chatzer, into a courtyard that's eina me'urevet. Eina me'urevet means there's no eruv. You haven't joined your food supplies together or a meal together, and if you're not allowed to carry in that courtyard, this is a rabbinic prohibition, we've spoken about this. So if you want to save something, you're saving it, but you're violating a rabbinic prohibition. Now, the whole point of that parak, when we get to there, we'll talk about it, is really to talk about what is the status of different objects. And you know, we'll talk about different sfarim and different books and the qualities of the different statuses of pieces of parts of Tanakh and writings. And that's really what the parak is just using in the opportunity of this discussion to talk about that. So because practically, you know, when a house is on fire, you don't go through your whole list of things and decide what you're gonna take out. There's just no time. But let's say you want to save this from a fire. So are you allowed to save a kamea from a fire, bring it out to a chatzer that's ena me'urevet, thereby violate a rabbinic prohibition? So tashma, we have an answer. Habrachot v'hakamein, brachot that are written on parchment, v'hakamein, and amulets, aval b'sheish ben otiyot, even though they have otiyot, meaning these are kameot that are made out of Hebrew letters, okay, as opposed to other things they would use to make meot, other materials or spices, whatever it is. Okay, and they, what's that line mean? Look at Rashi. Oh, Okay, interesting. These are kameot that have psukim from the Torah. So you could imagine a kameah that would quote a pasuk from last week's parasha. What pasuk from last week's parasha could be valuable to write into a kameah? Anybody want to take a guess? Someone's got it. All the plagues I brought upon Egypt, I won't bring upon you because I am Hashem, your healer. That's a good pasuk to have in a kameah. You want to get that pasuk, right? It's going to be a kameah that's worth a lot of money. So any of these, so we're saying any brachot kameah, apal b'sheish ben otiyot, anyanot har b'shevat Torah, they quote for extensively from the Torah, ein matzilin otami b'nei adleka. You're not allowed to save them from a fire. And they burn where they are. Meaning these are not things you're allowed to violate Shabbat to take out from a fire. So the answer is that you're not allowed to take these out. Now, what is the problem with saving these things? You would expect it would be a good thing to save these types of objects on Shabbat, and they would be permitted to violate a rabbinic prohibition to bring something to a courtyard to save them. So there are two different explanations given in the Rishonim. So the Baal HaMor Paskins, he says as follows, that the truth is that you're not really, Meikar Adin, you're not allowed to write psukim from the Torah. You're allowed to write a Sefer Torah, but you can write psukim from the Torah and that are not in a Sefer Torah. This is dating back to a long time, this prohibition, okay? And the same thing is true. It's Tfilot and Brachot. These are things that were supposed to be Be'al Peh and that we shouldn't write them down. And because you're not really supposed to write them down to begin with, therefore you're not allowed to save them. That's the Baal HaMor. Okay, we'll talk about whether that's still true or not. But Rabbeinu Perachya, another Rishon, says as follows. The reason you're not allowed to save these things is that the truth is you're not really allowed to use psukim from the Torah for refuah. This borders on superstitious. This borders on using the Torah for inappropriate purposes. And because you're not allowed to do that to begin with, therefore, you're not allowed to save these things from the fire. Okay, now, are you allowed to, this is an interesting question, are you allowed to write these things down, you know, in today's day and age? And the answer is obviously yes. Look how many books and writings we have of psukim, and, you know, these are not in Sifrei Torah. Nowadays we write things down because of this notion of Eitlas Hashem Eferu Taratecha. In order to, we felt it was necessary. If we didn't write things down, we would have lost to our knowledge. So we write them down. Now the halacha lemaaseh, the Shulchan Aruch quotes two different opinions whether you're allowed to save these types of kameot bizman hazeh. Okay, this is in Yoredeah Kuf Ayin Tet Seif Yudbet and Yudalid. He brings two different opinions about this. And one opinion, he says that it's prohibited. The Mishnah Berurah explains there, and the Mishnah Berurah paskins like that. But there's another opinion that if these kameot have Shem Hashem in them, then you would be allowed to save them. Okay, so this is, you know, all these questions about the status of these objects. Now, the Gemara then goes on and says, okay, so we see that you're not allowed to save these things from a fire. But do you need to put these amulets into a geniza? Okay, when you have to bury them. Geniza means to bury, the gnose, to conceal, to hide. Okay, the Cairo geniza was a famous, this is found by Salomon Schechter in early 1900s. He found this huge, huge stash of old documents from the Middle Ages that was in some closed room in a Beit Knesset in Cairo. Okay, I think it was Cairo, not Fustat. And these documents, which he brought to Cambridge University, okay, helped us to understand all, like, the entire, you know, the Middle East, okay, during medieval times. It helped us to understand Sfaradi, Edona Mizrach Jewry, because there are letters in there from Rabbi Yehuda Levi and the Rambam and manuscripts and there have been tens, if not hundreds, of books written on this era of Jewish history based on what we found in the Cairo Geniza. Okay, so now Tashma Hayakatuv. So do you have to put this in Geniza? So we have a Braita which is going to, you know, try to prove our point. So Tashma Hayakatuv. If it says Hayakatuv. So let's say it's written on the the on the handles of the kelim shem Hashem. Okay, the al karei hamita, and it's written on the sort of the posts of the bed. Yagod. Okay. You should actually cut off the Shem Hashem from those things, v'ignizenu, and you should put these things into Geniza. And then you could use the object for, you know, any other purposes that you have. Okay? And these kameot, which might have Shem Hashem in them, they're no different than these objects, meaning you have to put them in Geniza, it sounds like. Okay, the answer is yes, you have to put these things in the Geniza. So that's the answer is yes, you do need to put them in Geniza. Now, a third halachic question, what about the ganes behen beveit hakiseh? Can you bring them into the bathroom? Ma'ayesh behen kedusha v'asir. Maybe they have holiness and you're not allowed to. Or maybe they don't have holiness. They don't have holiness and you're allowed to. Tashma. V'lo b'kameh. We have another bride. V'lo b'kameh was manche eno min ha-mumche. A kameh that's not from a mumche, you're not allowed to. We're talking about carrying it on Shabbat. Okay, that's our Gemara. If it's from a mumcha, you're allowed to go out. If you want to say that a kamea has kedusha, zimin the mitzvah lebeit hakiseh v'ati da'atuni dalad amod brishut arabim. So if you're allowed to walk out with this thing on Shabbat, well, it's also likely you have to go to the bathroom. And if you have to go to the bathroom and it has kedusha, you're going to take it off. And then you're going to take it off and you're going to carry it for amod brishut arabim. And therefore, we see that it must be that these kamea don't have kedusha, because if we're letting you carry, That collides with, that clashes with you being able to wear it on Shabbat. So how do we resolve this? The Gemara says, "Hachem la'askin and b'kamea shel ikarin." No, here we're talking about a kamea shel ikarin. A kamea shel ikarin is a kamea made out of certain materials. Again, that's not writings. It's nothing that has holiness. It's just, I don't know, different. I remember once I was in South Africa on Shabbat. Someone was showing me that they were wearing this necklace that prevented the radio waves from a smartphone from affecting them. I don't know what it was. It wasn't clear to me whether it was something scientific or superstitious. Okay. There was no writing on it. It was some material. Okay. So that's commercially. So the Gemara says, V'hatanya, echad kamesh oktav, echad kamesh yikaran. But our Mishnah said explicitly, our Braita, the last daf said, this is true about a kamesh oktav, the kamesh yikaran, meaning both of these things you're permitted to wear on Shabbat and wear them out. So, we're talking about a cholesh yesh bo sakana. So cholesh yesh bo sakana could do anything. They have to wear the kamesh all the time, even in the bathroom, because if they take it off, we assume they could die from it. Okay, so the stakes are much higher. So therefore, we're not worried about you going to the bathroom with it. Okay, so...
Rabbi?
Yes. Yes.
In terms of going to the bathroom, I mean, nowadays we have zippers or something like that, but, I mean, there's a lot of clothing you had to take off to go to the bathroom. I mean, you probably had to carry that also. So that was just a practical thing about going to the bathroom. So why is this any different than clothing?
So it's a good question about how, you know, what clothing people wore. I think people used to wear these, you know, these... You'd almost wear like a big sheet, okay, with a hole in the top, and you'd put your head through it, and it would come down to the front and in the back, and then you put your belt, you know, around that. I don't know if that prevents a person. I don't know if the clothing needs to be taken off to go to the bathroom. I don't know. You know, I don't know if they were wearing pants in the same way that we wear pants. It's a good question. It's a good question. Do you have any pictures in there from the? Do you have any good pictures from today's shiur?
I'll work on those pictures, yeah. Not right on my...
You're always welcome to share some good pictures from the Steinsaltz Gemara. But this is some of the sociocultural aspects of the Talmudic times that are worth looking into. Okay, let's finish up the Hatanya. But the Gemara said explicitly, they're allowed to carry this on Shabbat. And like came in the Masi, so the Gemara comes to a conclusion that even if you're not allowed to look at Rashi, so even if you're not allowed to carry them into the Beit HaKiseh, you're still allowed to carry them on Shabbat. Why? Because the Kamea is Masei. Masei comes from the word, you know, lirapot, okay? Asuta, ase is lirapot, is to heal. Even if it's in your hand, nami shaper dami, it still works. Okay. And even if he carries it in his hands, meaning what this is now, this is actually a big chidush. Even it's a tachshit that you could even carry, that a kamel works not just when it's around your neck, but even when it's in your hand. And even when you're carrying it, it's considered an accoutrement or an accessory to your body, and you're allowed to carry it. Okay, this is a very big chidush. And you're not violating, you still don't violate Dalat Amot Birshut Rabbi. That's the big chidush. Okay, so we're going to end here with this. We'll continue with this Bezrat Hashem tomorrow. And we're going to do this very interesting Gemara tomorrow about wearing armor. Okay, and that's tomorrow's Gemara, if I'm not mistaken. Or maybe it's a little bit later on. Maybe it's Samach Gimel. But Bezrat Hashem, we'll get to this very soon. So we'll continue tomorrow. Wishing you all a great day. I'm going to stay on. End the recording.